We're going to get started everybody. Okay, I'll go ahead and call the Common Council meeting to order. It is August 28th, 2012, and let's all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Weigle.
Here.
Warwick.
Here.
Romine.
Here.
Penrod.
Here.
Simpson.
Here.
Okay, before we go into the minutes, I just have one clarification for the ordinances and resolutions. The regulation of precious metals is actually going to be tabled for tonight because our attorney and police chief are still working on changes for that. So just for the record, that's going to be tabled until the next meeting. Okay? Very good. Minutes, have you all had a chance to review those? And have any questions, changes, anything to that effect?
I'll make a motion that we accept the minutes from Tuesday, August 24th as presented.
I second it.
Okay, motion by Nicole, seconded by Bill. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. We will go ahead and go to the Drug Task Force presentation. Who wants to start?
I'm here for the City Police Department. Also a member of the Whitley County Drug Task Force. This is my work partner, Bill Bryce. I've only been doing the task force for about 3 or 4 months now. Bill's been on a lot longer. He's going to do most of the talking this evening. We're asked to come give a presentation on meth, what to look for as far as products that are used to manufacture it, and then we have some finished product as well.
Well, thanks for having us, and we're glad to see that you got an interest in this, because this is certainly by far the number one problem in America as far as I'm concerned. We talk to people that are on meth in little old Whitley County every day. Our jail's full of people that are either there on meth charges or other charges, but are using meth or at least know somebody that does. It's affecting numerous people that cannot get off of it. Put them in jail, they'll be there a couple years. Only thing that keeps them going is knowing when they get out, they get to go make meth. And we hear that same story over and over. So I don't have the answers. I know it's a big problem, but what we do is try to bust the guys and put them in jail. So this is how they make it, the things you see out there. And everything there, you notice if you're paying attention when we got here, came out of that bag. And that is the meth lab. That's the entire meth lab right there, everything they need. There's one device on there that is an electric device. That's a pill grinder. They don't really need that, but they use it. And they can use it in an inverter in a car. And so they can do this whole process in Walmart parking lot after they just went in and bought everything. Everything's available, readily available at Walmart. And it started out in the parking lot. 2 hours later, we spoke it. We'll go over how they do it and try to give you a better understanding. At any point you have a question, please stop us and ask us. We'd rather have you know the answer than you walk out here wondering. Or if you think about it afterwards, stop either Gary or I, and we'll answer for you, because this is a bad problem, and any help we can get from everybody is really important to our community. So we'll start by how they make it. I'm going to show you a video. There is no voice with the video, so I'm going to talk through some of it. Remember, this video is done in a lab under controlled situations, so they're using products that they're purchasing commercially, not things that they're making by buying it at Walmart. I'll try to explain what they're using as they to go through it. And that's everything they need right here. What he's doing here is he is grinding ephedrine tablets. So he needs Sudafed, okay? Sudafed is a controlled substance as far as it has to be signed for, and you can only buy so much of it. So they're buying boxes of Sudafed. to the Fed. Comes in a package like this. You also get convenience packages. This right here is 3.6 grams of Sudafed. What they'll get out of Sudafed, they'll get about a good cook. Will get about 80% conversion. So out of the 3.6 conversion, or we usually what they'll start with is about 2.88 grams. They'll get about 2 grams of finished product. It sells on the street for about $50 a gram. So a good cook, one box of Sudafed, $200. So it's grinding the pills, putting them in a bottle, typically a 2-liter bottle. For some reason they seem to like Mountain Dew bottles. We see Mountain Dew bottles all the time. Now this is an older video, and what they used to do is they used to take starter fluid. He's got the can turned upside down. He's removed, it's got a straw that goes all the way to the top of it. So by turning it upside down and opening the valve, what he did is he relieved all the pressure but did not expel any of the ether that was in there. So after doing that, he punched holes in the can and get the ether. They found out they can use Coleman fuel as their organic solvent, and so this is much more stable than ether, much less dangerous. They know that. So typically what we see is Coleman fuel. Now it can be any Coleman fuel, but they like the premium. The next thing they need is a battery. It seems like all of them are using Energizer AA batteries. They use these AA batteries. You can see he's stripping it there. He's taking the lithium out of it. Now he's going to take that lithium, he's going to put it in a Coleman fuel or something to coat it, because lithium and water don't mix. And when they do, it causes a fire on its own. So they coat it because later they're going to add water. So here's the lithium. They cut up the lithium. So what we're looking for sometimes is these lithium batteries, they're made into pieces. They have to rip it open. Then they're going to add some sodium hydroxide. Sodium hydroxide is lye, and it's just a white substance, and it's just normal household lye. They put the lye in there. Then next they're going to add some water. I just told you that lithium and water don't mix without carrying the fire, so that's why it's coated with the Coleman when they put it in there. But when he starts cooking this, you'll see that we have some arcing that will occur. Mm-hmm. So they mix that up, and they just let it dissolve. Okay. What this is doing is the whole process is as simple as removing one oxygen molecule from pseudoephedrine. Take one oxygen molecule off there, makes meth. This whole process, that's what they're doing. So they're dissolving the meth, they're dissolving the pseudoephedrine into this. See that little arcing down there? Now the reason why that doesn't explode is there's no air. If it had a little bit of air in there, kaboom. We'll show you one of those too. And we know of some that have happened in our community. One out of Miami Village a year ago, and one I think it was Gary's first day on the drug task force where the car blew up. So the lithium is taken on that one oxygen molecule. That's what this whole process is. All this stuff in the bottom, trash. It's the pill binder from the Sudafed. It's the ammonium nitrate. Now the smell that this is going to give off, these are little gold beads. Those little gold beads are just lithium. They've used too much lithium in this cook. And you see those gold beads, that just tells the put an abundance of lithium in. Every 20 minutes they add some lye and let it go. They have to burp it every once in a while because it builds up some pressure. And about 2 hours later, they'll end up with the lithium is taken on that hydrogen molecule, that oxygen molecule, and now the meth is dissolved in the Coleman fuel. And everything else in there is trash. And then we find it alongside the road. And that's what it'll look like at the end of it, too. We'll have all that stuff in the bottom, and they'll pitch that into a ditch. We'll be laying there, and we hope that people have seen enough on TV to know better to do it. Now, he's pulling it out with a little pipette. Well, what they usually do is they'll just dump it into a filter, and now everything goes through there is the liquid. Okay, so then when they got the liquid, the next thing they do is they add salt, either sodium or sulfuric acid or muriatic acid, and make a hydrochloric gas generator. He's got a commercially made one, but this is what it'll look like. Salt and an acid will make hydrochloric gas. Put the hydrochloric gas down into that fluid, and as you put it in the fluid, then like a crystal globe, it precipitates and makes the meth just falls out of it. And so they end up with the meth, they dry it out. Here he's testing it, and he shows negative, the blue is the color you want. Negative for ephedrine, positive for meth. So he had a good conversion there. So I went through that kind of fast to follow the video. Here's the gas, I can't say the word. Anyway, they're testing it, and it was positive for meth. So again, what they do is they add the Coleman fuel to this bottle. Okay? Then they add their Sudafed, they crush up their Sudafed into a powder. They don't have to even crush it or grind it. It just makes the process faster because they want to dissolve it in the Coleman fuel. So they put the Sudafed in there. They strip the batteries. They get the ammonium nitrate. Now, ammonium nitrate, of course, they got in that little jar there. Where our guys are getting it is these things right here. Everybody see the instant cold pack? Instant cold pack has got a water bladder, which looks like this, and that you pop. When you pop that, it mixes with the solid that's in there. The solid that's in here is ammonium nitrate. So they don't want the water bladder. So all they want is ammonium nitrate. So they add some ammonium nitrate, get that from the cold pack. Then they add just a little bit of lye, and then a cap full of water. And then they let it go for 2 hours. Every 20 minutes you add a little more lye, burp it because it builds up pressure. And at the end of that 2 hours, they take a filter, coffee filter, anything they can use as a filter, and they will take this and dump it through the filter. So what they end up with is the gunk. Some of it sticks to the bottom here and stays in here. Some of it stays in the filter, but the fluid comes through there, and the fluid's what they want. The fluid has the meth in it. Then they take the salt, any kind of salt, table salt, ice cream salt, canning salt, pickling salt, and two of their favorites are Liquid Lightning or Rudo. We find those. Add that into here, makes a hydrochloric gas. Hydrochloric gas. So notice I got a knot in here. This isn't a nerve. There's nothing in here, but this is the way we find them. Because they don't, when we find them, they've tied a knot in it because they don't want it to keep gassing. This thing will gas for months. So we ask people not to mess with these things, they're the precursors, but this especially, this hydrochloric gas, if you breathe it into your lungs, it meets with the moisture in your lungs and turns immediately into hydrochloric acid. So, it's not good. So, it'll burn your lungs and cause problems with that. So these don't mess with any of them. But once they've made this, now they'll just take it and pump it. Squeeze it a little bit out and hold it into that fluid that they've got, and it'll precipitate out and just like a snow globe. And the snow globes shake up, and it'll just drop out. Once they've got it all out, they will filter it one more time. The fluid that's out is garbage, but what they have left in their filter then is meth. And like I say, a good cook getting one box of nothing about a Sudafed would get about 2 grams. And typically what we find in our little world is that you can't buy Sudafed more than what the law allows. You sign for it, you run your license, and you can only buy a certain amount per month. After that, you have to get other people to buy for you. So they do one of two things. They either pay you $50 to go buy a box, which is pretty lucrative, and this only costs $7.96. If it gives me $50, I actually made $40 on it, and I'll never get caught doing it. And so that's the theory. They'll get people to buy these for them. They'll get people to buy other things for them too, but especially the Sudafed, that's what they can't get once they can't overpurchase. So they've actually made the problem a little bit worse because now they're getting people involved that aren't even in the culture. The other thing they may do is people that are in the culture, they will give them a half a gram of meth for a box. So they'll get 2 grams out of this, they will give away a half a gram, and they get to keep a gram and a half. And that's how they support their habit. Nobody's getting rich on meth other than the cartels. People are smoking it up. People will smoke a half to a gram a day if they're really bad addicts. So all they're doing is feeding their habit. Nobody's making money on it. They're just making their life bad with anybody around them. What meth looks like then, typically, what we used to see a lot of, and probably Bill Simpson's day, crystal meth, ice, nice clean white, imported, coming from the cartels. Now what we're seeing, this is kind of, if I can find the one I'm looking for, we had a cook down in Indiana, this is from the same person made these. This is kind of a whitish color, and this is kind of a brownish color, made by the same person down in South Philly. So it just depends on how, you know, what the process is. It's not, the process is not going to be the same every time. It's going to be all close, but not the same. They may cook it a little longer, they may do something different. But it has many different looks to it. Some of it's brown. Here's a good chunk of it right there. There's 10 grams of meth right there, a big brown chunk. So if they actually look at something and say it's meth, it's cocaine, the only way to really do it is to look at your surroundings and see what other things are around, or to do a field test on it.
Hey, Bill. Is meth a situation where if they try it once, or if an individual would try it once, that it would be something they would be immediately addicted to, or is it something where after multiple times they get addicted? I mean, is it... You understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, people are going to be affected differently, but yes, we hear that a lot, that they tried it once and they were addicted. And it has to do with the dopamine released in the brain. Dopamine is your pleasure. It's the substance, the hormone used for your pleasure center, and this is the greatest feeling ever. And so you always want to get that back, and so people get hooked on it almost immediately. But usually they're predestined to it. People are not just starting with meth. They've been involved in other things. Their families are involved, you know, whatever. They've been exposed to it. They didn't just go to a party one night and use meth, probably. That'd be the rarity. So that's some of the things to look for. Look for these water packs, okay? If you see those out there, please let Gary or I know, because anybody in the room ever seen one of these?
Sports.
Have you seen this thing here, though?
Well, just a water pack inside.
But you didn't know what it looked like, did you?
No.
Why not?
Not.
Because you never opened one?
I've never tried to.
The only reason somebody's opening one of these is because they're getting ammonium nitrate out. That's the only reason.
Because they're open. I had to be careful.
Yeah. So if you've never seen it, so if you see those, that's a clue to us, and we're going to pursue that. Anybody had that bad of a cold?
Where did this start?
Maybe a year or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these things will show up in fires, too. All this stuff won't burn. And everybody opened up a lithium battery this last week or so. So look for that kind of stuff. Look for brown pills. Look for white things. Here's a clue too. Something as simple as this. Who drills holes in their cats? So that's the kind of stuff that we'd like to know about. And please give us a call if you ever have any questions on any of this stuff.
Especially if you find a pot or the gas generator, just leave it alone. Just give us a call.
Anything else?
We are done.
Okay.
If you have any questions, we'll pack up.
Okay. Questions from the council?
It's a dumb question. Is that stuff snorted or smoked or how is it congested?
Keep going. There's a fourth
all
one.
Of the above.
All of the above. Snorted, ingested, smoked, and injected. Typically, people will smoke it. And they'll smoke it on a canoe, a boat. They take a piece of foil about this long, make it into like a canoe shape, sprinkle a little stuff on there, put water on it, take a butane lighter, put it underneath, put a straw in your mouth, and suck the fumes in. But that's how they typically go. After a while, they're not getting that same high as they want, and eventually they start shooting it.
Terry, I think, has a question for you.
Hey, Bill, what's the history on this? I mean, that's a lot of nasty material that somebody's mixed together to get high.
Created in Japan in the World War II to keep their warriors fighting, because you can stay up for days.
Seriously?
You can stay up for days on this stuff, and they do. They'll stay up for 3 days and they'll crash.
Wow.
And so, you know, they thought this is good. Like, you lose weight, you got all kinds of activity, and you're like, on the outside it looks good until you start losing your teeth and start becoming emaciated because you don't lose your appetite like weeks.
Other questions?
Thanks.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks. So if you have some handouts, I'll leave them on the department head table.
I think if I remember right, because there was a presentation at the mayor's conference that showed the levels of dopamine for meth are like skyrocket compared to food or, you know, sexual intercourse or anything like that. So that's pretty, I mean, big difference between the dopamine that's released on meth versus other things. I think even compared to like marijuana and even other drugs, meth is so much larger in how much dopamine it releases, if I remember correctly.
You know? We've had some people, it's sad to say, they'll sit there and they'll tell us that they have the kids in one hand and meth in the other hand. I know what the right decision is, but I couldn't make it. That's really sad.
Did you see the Journal Gazette today in the marijuana report?
I did not.
They determined that use of marijuana may lower your IQ.
I'm sure that was paid for by some kind of federal study.
Was it followed by duh?
I was dumbfounded by the whole thing.
Thank you both. Appreciate your time. I think that was a very informative presentation. And, you know, something that I think it's fair to say is not going to go away anytime soon. So I know those guys, and we'll keep fighting it. So, okay, let's go ahead and go to Ordinance 2012-24. Can I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Ben, seconded by Dan and Nicole. all those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2012-24 by title only.
Ordinance 2012-24, an ordinance amending Chapter 101, Consumer Fireworks of Title 9 of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
If you remember, this came up to vote for the first reading last time, and basically allows the Board of Works to set any additional dates for individuals, citizens, to use fireworks within our community. Our current ordinance has very strict standards as to only allowing fireworks to be used by citizens on the dates that the states specify we have to. This ordinance first of all, allows the Board of Works to set forth any additional days based on special situations, like this year when we had the burn ban. It also, I think, recognizes the fact that we don't handle the, is it called commercial grade? Is that what the commercial grade fireworks, which is what we contract out for the 4th of July. So it's with the big booms, if you will. That is regulated by the state. So
the Board of Works sets that other date? Because the ordinance that's in the packet says the common council.
Right. Well, I think that was something that we had changed last time. Yeah, that's something we had changed. That's probably, well, I know that's what we approved the last time with that change. Because, and the reason for that is because the Board of Works is the one that also sets forward things like parades and additional dates, and it fits more appropriately under the Board of Works powers rather than the Common Council powers.
But it still says Common Council.
And I agree. I know what it says. So I guess I'm just wondering, is that...
That was the change.
From council to board. Yeah, but it should be the other way. Because the first one said Common Council.
I think it always said council, didn't it?
Yeah, it's always said council. It needed to be changed from council to board. So.
And that has been changed. Somehow I just didn't get it over to you. I went back and changed it right away.
Yeah, and that's why I thought they had that little sticker, so maybe I didn't get the right one.
I bet you didn't, because I went back and changed that, so that, shoot, okay. That has been changed. I actually have the...
Okay, so...
We just have to reread. Oh, wait. No, we need to get it done.
I couldn't hear you.
We have until the 27th.
We can table it for 1 week. We can table the second reading, or you want to do a third reading?
It doesn't matter.
Will the third reading be in time?
Yeah.
No, because then we'll have to get the Board of Works to approve a day.
Oh, which will be the meeting before this meeting, the next meeting. Yeah.
Can we approve it?
But I think you can approve it with the change.
Yeah.
I mean, I have that ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for some reason it's just not.
Yeah, and she sent it over, and evidently when I wrote the new one on there, I got her on the wrong one.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So
we can make a motion to approve this ordinance with the change of Board of Works,
making
rather than Common Council.
Correct.
In
yes, you can do
section
that.
D here.
Okay.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Nicole, seconded by Ben. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Ordinance 2012-24 passes on second reading with the change of Common Council to Board of Works. We're going to table 2012-30. Do you need a motion on that, or can we just agree to table it?
Yeah, you can just agree to table it.
Okay. So we will pass 2012-30. And go to the next ordinance, which is 2012-29, which involves the traffic code in regards to golf carts. And I have a motion to read by title only.
So moved.
Second.
Motioned by Jackie, seconded by Dan. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. Please read 2012-29 by title only.
Ordinance 2012-29. An ordinance amending Chapter 73, Traffic Code of Title 7, of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia City, Indiana.
Chief.
Yeah. This is for the golf cart ordinance. We had a situation where the county has now adopted a golf cart ordinance, and the regulations are similar between city and county. Our ordinance reads to operate a golf cart within the city limits. Must have a city golf cart permit, and so I was looking at a way to have our officers be able to readily identify who has city permits and who may not, whether they have a city permit or a county permit. So we thought the golf carts could have some kind of placard or decal that the permit holders could attach to the golf cart. Officers would be able to, without stopping the golf cart and checking for a permit, they would be able to see that person has had a permit issued. And it was also brought up that we would charge $5 per golf cart permit to cover the cost of the decal and the time of the officer doing these golf in town, we do, if somebody calls up and wants to get a golf cart permit, an officer goes to wherever the golf cart is. Sometimes it's the city hall, sometimes it's at the residence. And they have checklists they go through to make sure that the requirements are met and that a permit is issued. So our thought was that this ordinance passes, we would then include a decal with that permit to give to the applicants. And the people that have already been issued golf cart permits, you would have to mail them permits in the mail along with the new ordinance regulation that they would have to fix to their golf carts.
I think if I remember correctly, the difference between the county and us, I think the county does a $50 fee.
That's correct.
And we have not done a fee in the past, but basically what the Board of Works had suggested to Tim was that we would basically have a free period, if you will, that between now and January 1st of 2013, individuals would still be able to come from the city and get a free golf cart permit up to that January 1st timeline. I'm not sure if we probably haven't even started designing or anything with the decals yet, because, or have we?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Pull off and see what happens.
Right, I gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. So with that being the case, you know, I think this is something that's going to make it a heck of a lot easier for our officers to be able to spot whether or not a golf cart is legal, first of all, and second of all, that they've gone through the proper checks that the city requires. There is a difference in checks between what the city requires and what the county requires, or at least a different process. Would that be fair?
Different process.
So in any case, this kind of sets that out. And I think, you know, our officers will be able to better determine how legal the golf carts are. So, any questions of Chief or anything about the ordinance you want to discuss?
This is probably a question for Marcia, but is it assignable? I mean, if you sold the golf cart, does the permit go with it, or do you have to get a new permit?
Well, that's, what do you want to do there?
I would say that you'd need a new permit if it was a new owner, that they would have to have, because they have to have insurance and things like that on the golf cart, so that would be with the owner of the golf cart to make sure that all those things are followed, that checklist.
And if somebody bought a new cart, they'd still need to get it checked out and stuff, so either way, really, the permit shouldn't be transferable, is what I hear you saying.
In my opinion, yes.
I think that should be put in there.
That the permit is non-transferable?
Correct.
Further discussion or questions? Marcia, do you see any problem with that?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'll probably put that in F, just write a second sentence there.
Oh, okay. After the $5?
Yeah.
Okay. Then can I have a motion to pass first reading?
Make a motion that we pass ordinance 2012-29 with said changes by Ben.
Second.
Okay. Motioned by Dan, seconded by Ben. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It's unanimous. We'll move 2012-29 to second reading at the next council meeting. Catch up here. Okay, next up is department head reports, but before we do that, I do want to introduce a special guest to our council meeting. Stacy Quinn actually does not have an E in her first name, so we're going to get her name taken care of, but Stacy is a member of our new youth council, and what I've asked the youth council to do is I'll sign up for one date a month, where they will come in and kind of give a report as to what they're doing to you as the council, as well as the Board of Works and department heads, and kind of just be available so when we're discussing certain ordinances that may pertain to the youth of our community, that they have a voice at the table. And obviously, if there's questions that come up that you have that you'd like to kind of get a youth opinion A member of the youth council will be here one meeting a month, so it should hit at least every reading on either the first or the second of any ordinance. So, in any case, with that, Stacy, do you want to kind of introduce yourself and then talk about what the youth council did this last week?
Maybe the same thing I did.
That'd be great. Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm Stacy. I'm a sophomore at Eagle Hills County, and I was elected the clerk for our youth council. Our chair is Kirsten Thomas, and our vice chair is Morgan Wilcoxon. And at our last meeting, well, our first meeting last week, we made a proposal to make a Facebook page. It's Columbia City Youth Council, and it kind of gives the community an opportunity to say what they like going on or what they would like to see change. So that was motioned by Aaron Schinbeckler and then seconded by Hunter LaRue, and it was a 9-0 vote, so we are currently making a Facebook page.
Couple other things, excuse me, water went down the wrong hole. Couple of other things that they worked on was that they'd like to put a kind of a comment box, I believe, at both Eagle Tech as well as CCHS to kind of get feedback from their peers as to what kind of topics and things they want the Youth Council to address. Furthermore, they're looking at two other projects involving kids, specifically elementary school kids, as well as the businesses in the downtown. So we spent a lot of the first meeting brainstorming. They also met with some of the department heads that are here to kind of just get to know them and figure out what they're doing. And a lot of what the Youth Council is about educating on local government and about what we do here, as well as the Board of Works, what I do as mayor, department head, so on and so forth. And so they, by the second half of the day, they really opened up and had some time to talk with the press, and I think that was a unique experience for them. And so it ended up being a really good day, and look forward to a lot of projects coming out of that group, as well as a lot of learning opportunities. So throughout this year, they will be visiting certain departments through their meeting times, as well as doing some projects. So I'm really excited to kind of see what comes out of the group. They are very much giving them a lot of leeway as to what projects they want to tackle and how they want to kind of move forward, what they want to learn about. And so it's been really neat to see that they care about specifically what kind of business environment we have here in Columbia City, and what kind of businesses cater to their age group, and how we can attract more businesses like that. So so I won't go on too much more about that, but as you can tell, I'm a bit excited about the results of what will come out of the Youth Council. And Stacy, I appreciate you being here tonight. Okay, department head reports. Mike, we'll start with you.
As I told the council before, when we had the mixer that failed, I thought it fell to the bottom of our storage tank, and we began the process of pumping all the sludge out and having it hauled away. Once we got it down, was able to see the mixer. It didn't actually hit the tank floor. It stayed on the guide rail itself. Just the shroud that goes around it broke, and the mixer just slid all the way to the bottom. We turned it on and ran it, and it checked out perfectly fine. So it took us about 2.5 hours yesterday with straps, several different straps, and come along to actually get it from the bottom up to the top onto the deck, so we'll be able to work on it. We're waiting on quotes for the repair parts right now, so that's going to be, other than the sludge hauling expense, but the repair to the mixer should be significantly less than what we thought. Went through our CSO audit last week with IDEM. We started that about 9 o'clock and finished up at 3:30. It was an all-day process we went through. We came through just fine, no problems, violations or anything like that. The only thing that we will have to purchase, intensity rain gauges, and be required to have one at the facility, and then I have to determine throughout the city how many, try to go with the least amount as possible, but to cover most of the areas that the CSOs are in. So we can report that during CSO events, and then also when our EQ basin, if we have a discharge on that, and if we have a violation there or anything that we don't think, you know, we could not help it, we can go back and track, or what we have tracked from our rain gauges, the data on that, and show them that, you know, we could not help it because the rain was this much, the intensity was this much, it was more than we could do. We have that backup by having that information. My initial thought is to have those installed at lift stations so we could have it with our existing telemetry system, have it sent back to us real time, and create a data file on our computer system out there so we can just gather that information when we need it. Instead of having one of my staff going out and download this information onto a laptop and then bring it back and put it in a central location. If we could just get it sent to us, you know, on a daily basis, or, you know, especially during rain events, and log that, that would make that a lot easier. And that'll be something that'll be forthcoming that I'll have to put together prices and stuff like that on. We will also have to update our CSO operational plan, which was written in 1991. There's going to be parts in there that we can take out and throw away because they no longer apply. And there's new information, the things that we currently do now, things that are coming up that we will have to put in that and update and submit that by July 1st of next year. Primary tanks are moving along. They should install the last auger tomorrow. I'll be cleaning that in the morning. I'll give Kelly a thanks now. He's going to send a truck out, a gem machine, to clean the last trough out. And they'll install the last auger, the flights, and everything is like... Everything as far as mechanisms are in, the augers will be in, and the motors should be in by September 8th. And we'll also be having startup on the recycle station somewhere between the 10th and 14th. We should have startup on this equipment, startup and training, which I'll get together the paperwork and I'll submit those training hours to the state to go for our licenses. So we'll get some free hours out of that. Any questions? That's it.
Questions of Mike. Thank you, Mike. Terry.
Finished up last week with Austin Drummond, who's the intern of the mayor's from Huntington University, on a project we hope to unveil pretty soon. We reported last time that our tornado siren was down at DePoy Drive. It is still down. JNK expects to have parts in this week so we can get that back online. And we're working with the county on a notification system that we can use to send alerts and emergency messages out to the public. That's all I have tonight.
Questions of Terry? Thank you, Terry. Tom?
Other than what I've been posting you guys on different things that are going on with the fire department, we're doing planning for several training things, one of them being Doug Reed is planning on doing a community CPR class. It would be a non-certified class because he can do it free that way. Just have people come in and do a, this is how you do CPR, and not give them their cards. We can offer, because he is a CPR instructor, we could offer it as a certified class and get the cards. But we thought we might get more participants if we offered it free of charge. There's a whole lot of things going on, so I'll try to keep posted.
Questions of Tom. Thank you, Tom. Tim.
Now, last week, officers were involved in some firearms trainings and qualifications. One of those was rifle qualifications. Another one was another speed and accuracy shoot. Those were done at the new ISP range. We're glad to be out there training with our new sidearms and qualifying with our rifles. Captain Hiley's been working with... officer just making sure that the equipment inside the vehicles are working properly, and ordering some new mounts to get some more in-car computers installed, and get the necessary software and things on those in-car computers. I'm still looking into pricing and bids for some new police vehicles that hopefully we can order soon for 2013. We have some public relation things coming up soon. One is Detective Stevenson will be putting on a presentation for the Senior Citizen Center, and that will involve discussion about scams, identity theft, and things like that. We'll be talking with them. And Detective Archibald will be speaking with the freshman high school students
that would be during health class. It'll be drug awareness and dangers of drugs. So that's coming up soon as well. Next week, we have a meeting scheduled with the high school administrators. And just kind of sit down with them, kind of talk about expectations, services that we can offer them and they can help us out with. So just sit down and just kind of discuss how we can help each other out. Last week I was able to meet with the new HR director. It was nice to sit down with her and kind of talk about what she's working on and how she can assist our department. So it was just nice to sit down and meet her and find out what she's working on, how she can help us. And this week I'm going to meet with we have two training officers and just discuss how training will progress the rest of the year and to make sure that everyone is getting their state mandated trainings done for 2012.
Okay. Questions of Tim? Thank you, Tim. Larry?
We're continuing with our insulator replacements. This last week we had an abundance of work orders. We had 35 work orders and 27 locates, which is quite a lot for a week's period. Our new building, all the sticks are up, the structure, the main structure. Kelly's got the cement poured with the help of some of the rest of us. Changed the pole of 300 north, put in 400 foot of underground primary on 600 north, then set the transformer, made up the elbows, terminated, got it in service. Had two calls in South Whitley yesterday, in fact, from Dennis. Sent two guys down the first time, which explained to me the situation. Apparently we needed two guys to rectify the problem. A little later on today, which he was highly impressed, he said this never happens. But unfortunately that day it did. We had to go back down and had another problem, so we had to disconnect the three-phase transformer. And Dennis was there right with us every step, knowing what was going on and watching us. So everything turned out good, and like I say, he was the one who requested our services. It's not part of our agreement yet, but I'm sure our lawyers are working on it. Right, Marcia?
Right. What did you say, Larry?
And then lastly, but not least, I spoke to groups up, two different groups of our guys that have been working on trees, so that one group didn't just have to do the cutting of all the trees. I think tomorrow will be the last of our trees that was on the list, and then we can go around and start doing some of the limbs that are hanging. And a lot of calls you're probably getting from different people, so that we can get that part of that over with too. Basically, that's it.
Questions of Larry? I do want to compliment the electric department. They have done a great job at trying to take down all the trees after the storm. If you remember the Old Settlers Day storm, as it's now being termed, that came through, the electric department or an arborist that our tree board contracts with went through the city trees, the street trees, and found was it 23 trees. Street trees that need to be taken down because of them being a hazard. And so they've been kicking through those, and we have continued to get, as Larry mentioned, calls into our office about unsafe limbs hanging, or what are they called? Widowmakers? Is that what they've been called, termed? Yeah, so we have limbs that still need to be taken down, but I have to give a lot of credit to Larry and his guys for the hard work in taking down those trees, because without the electric department, we would be spending a lot more money on a contracted service to take down those trees. So it's great. Our electric department has the equipment and the skills to be able to do that. So.
One gentleman wouldn't leave me alone about his secondary wire that was going to his house, the tree. And I said, you know, it's on your property. We come in and cut it down. It costs us about $1,500. But if it does happen to knock your wire down, we can come back and put your wire up for about $150. And so the gentleman says, well, it don't cost that much to have a tree cut down. I said, if you wouldn't mind, I said, no cost you nothing to get an estimate. Go get an estimate from a tree service. He called me back and he said, you missed it, Mr. Whetstone. And I said, how's that? He said, it was $1,600.
Thanks, Larry. Okay, Mike.
We got all the rest of the new main in on South Line Street and connected it to the old existing main that runs further south, and hooked up the last four houses. So all we have left down there is do some restoration. We'll be getting some binder back and street cuts and getting some topsoil and seeding done along some of the places where we've dug. We went out to City Ford and Rail Connect Park and done some flow tests. We had some engineers wanting to know what kind of water was available for the empty lots out there for future development. We hooked up a meter at the water plant so we can start paying the sewage bill out there. It never has been done, so it's just been free sewer out there. One thing we talked about is retreating, getting the count set up, so we finally got that taken care of. We've done a meter setting in Deer Chase on Monday and should have done two in Eagle Glen today. And we've been changing out some of the older meters, putting in the new radio meters. And this morning I was at a hearing in Greenwood, Indiana for locating when we hit a gas line, our days had expired for the number of days we were supposed to be able to use that locate number. So they had a hearing to decide how to penalize us. And they gave us a written warning this time since it's first offense. So that's about it.
Just to provide some additional clarity, the line that we hit was missed by the company that marks the lines for NIPSCO. There is a line that's how many feet away from the one we hit?
It's about 3 feet away.
Okay, so they found that line, but not the line that we hit. That was a hidden line for us. So when we hit it, we were surprised that we hit it because the locator did not find that. So. So Mike's worked hard to try to kind of get our story across to the IURC, and for them to give us a warning, I think it's the right move. So appreciate your work on that, Mike. Questions to Mike? Thanks, Mike. Kelly.
Just an update on a curb project on Hannah. We were down there doing some work, digging out ramps, getting ready for the contractor to install curbs. We got that done. They do have the curbs installed now, and we'll be going in tomorrow doing restoration work. Dirt seems strong, and we do have another casting in the street that we need to dig out and raise. We'll pay for it, but it's not scheduled for next Tuesday. And then put the final service on. Now, button that project up. Sidewalk project on Line Street. We're down to Spencer, and we have a couple more ramps to do down there. last week, and we'll have it out some this week yet. Then pick up scheduled for next week, and fix the force main that was leaking at Columbia Shores last week. Got that fixed. And thank the mayor for coming out today to the shop. He showed up around lunch and hung out with us and had lunch and just kind of talked to everybody. And it's nice to have him around and just kind of do some talking.
Questions for Kelly.
I'll start
you next Wednesday for July. Just to throw that out. Questions for Kelly. Thank you, Kelly. Mark.
Last week we had Eagle Tech, the sophomore class. Come down and help us out. Did a lot of different jobs. They worked on our volleyball courts, reseeded our outfield, raked it, reseeded it, cleared trails, repainted the tunnel, spread mulch around the tennis courts. Did a lot of work for a couple hours. Of course, there was a lot of them, so a lot of them worked pretty good. So I really appreciate them doing that. Thank you. That's a big help. And they've kind of taken that ownership of that little area and used it a lot. Out for the benefit of Eagle Tech to have a place to go for things to do outside. I know that Mr. Sittler has used the trail back there. He has a class of freshmen this week that's going to be spreading wood chips in there. So they're not done. They're doing more. It's really neat to see that get used. So thank them. Obviously, we've been mowing a lot, getting ready for the fall festival. I think we'll see here in the next few days some advertising for the agenda for that. Since we've got a lot of the pieces in place now. So now we can start promoting it a little bit more. We had a softball team tournament this past weekend at Horses Park. It was put on by our softball committee, and they did a great job. We had several different teams that came down. I think it's a good stepping stone for them to build off of for next year. Had a lot of very positive comments about the park from people from other communities, and that was really nice to hear. So it was neat to have that done. So I thank them. Good job. So neat to use the park itself. We had a full forum. I want to thank you guys for the show up. That was neat to have many of you council members there and Rosie providing, being able to hear people's input. We have another one scheduled for September 8th at 1 o'clock at the library to do this again. That meeting I thought was really pro-pool as far as continuing to do something with the facility, but I'm still trying to hear from other people in the community. And so this is another opportunity for them to show up and tell us what they think. We did have people fill out surveys that were there. There were about 40 people there. We're going to continue to have people fill out surveys at the fall festival. Hopefully with my iPad, get that hooked up so they can do that one right as they're there. So that's how we're gathering information. To update on the trail and the bridge project, we had a park board meeting last night, awarded the bids, and they should be starting that process here in 2 or 3 weeks on the trail and the bridge. So it's exciting, and we're glad to get going.
Just as an FYI, Mark and I will be coming back to you as for an additional appropriation for that project. So just giving you a heads up that at the next council meeting we'll be coming back to you with a financial request. So. Also want to mention with the, I forgot it, what did you talk about right before the pool form, thank you. Yeah, it was about 50-50, 50% county residents, 50% city residents based on the attendance sheet. So, and that brings up many additional questions, but I thought, you know, 40 for our first pool forum is great. We hope to have even a larger number at the Saturday forum, which is a week from this coming Saturday, I believe, at 1 p.m. at the library. Invite you all to come back or to come to that meeting. We don't know what attendance will be, but going to be a great thing. Just as an FYI for you, I did ask the park board last night to have a decision made as to whether or not Burnworth will be open next year by December, and have then also kind of asked them to have a decision made as to what route we're going to go long-term wise sometime at the beginning of next year. So kind of starting to set some timelines as to where we're going to be and what we're going to do. Of course, as I've told you in the past, when it comes to the financial obligation of the city, that will of course come to you as the financial component of our city government. So, okay. Mark, anything else? Questions for Mark?
Just comment that the softball thing was a combined effort between the park and the softball board. And like I said, I talked to Coach Romangola, Homestead, and obviously Huntington as well, and they were very impressed with our parks, the amenities that we offer with the water and water park, and the things that their kids could do for not only playing softball. So it was obviously a combined effort. And I'm really excited about next year's possibilities with the number of teams potential as we move it up a week before school starts. Okay. So I think great things are going to happen with that.
Yeah, I continue to say I think we have some of the best parks in the state. I think we do such a great job, and I know that Mark and his staff continue to work on things like the trails and the parks itself, and so appreciate the not only that man hours that are put in by the park, but also all the volunteers that we have in regards to the Master Gardeners, Eagle Tech students, individuals who come in and pluck weeds while they're around, things like that. So kind of neat.
We have a tendency to take it for granted.
Absolutely.
And then when you hear other people from other communities come in and realize what we have versus what, I know I've visited a few parks myself and over the travel season of softball, and I'm like, you know, we really do have something nice going on.
I agree. Okay, very good. Marcia?
Nothing.
Rosie?
I didn't know when we were going to start talking about the water bond.
Oh.
Get started on that.
Yeah, I mean, we probably could put it on the next month's agenda, or the next week's agenda, next council meeting's agenda. That's fine. I think if, Mike, if you're ready to tackle that one, we can start having a discussion about the water bond, which obviously was a part of our rate structure that the IURC and the OUCC agreed to. So that's perfectly fine, if that's okay with everyone else. I see shaking her head, so I'm assuming that's okay. And how'd you bowl?
Good. I think we did get second.
Got second, yes. City team got second in the Corporate Challenge bowling event, so pleased with how our guys and gal did there. So,
who's on the bowling team?
The bowling team was
Randy Bonkelman, Todd, and Sean Lickie and me.
Mm-hmm.
It was just one round,
so it's for all the money. I don't know who ended up winning, but
yeah, it was the team we bowled.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had some good bowls.
That's great. Still very pleased. We the next sport will be softball. And Larry is promising to be the superstar on our team. So, so. Anything else, Rosie? Thank you. Jackie?
Nothing.
I only have one thing, and that's REMC has a member appreciation night, and because we're a member, I'd like to ask if anybody would be interested in attending for the City of Columbia City. The event is going to be held on Saturday, September 8th at the War Memorial Coliseum. Doors open at 6, meeting beginning at 7. The entertainment is Clay Walker. And if someone from the council would be interested in attending for the city, please see me afterwards. I'd love to have some representation there for that. I don't think I have anything else outside of just saying Jeff is gone because he is, of course, still taking classes for his bachelor's degree, and so that's why he's gone. But during the council, the Board of Works meeting, the Board of Works basically passed final completion, if you will, of the long-term control plan, Phase 2A project, so we're basically done. There's a little, some tweaks to still be done at the plant, and some things like that that we've had worked out. We had a major water leak during the project that we're getting worked out, that should help Mike's bottom line a little bit. Really pleased to see that project basically come to a close. So I think that's probably what Jeff would have reported on. So Dan, Ben, Nicole, Bill.
Only that it's unlikely that I'll be attending the next meeting. So.
Okay. Thank you. Audience? Okay. Media? Stacy, anything else? Okay, then I will call the meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.